All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM. Let's create.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Questlove Supreme. I'm here with the almighty Team Supreme. I assume that brand new Bill is on the streets right now.
Well, he in the water.
Okay.
No, he on vacation with the girls.
You know. He's on vacation with his family.
He's on vacation? Bill vacations? Where's he vacation?
They on a boat somewhere. They on a boat.
Damn. Okay.
He would say, I'm with a bunch of all the girls, though, so, you know, it's kind of vacation. That's what Bill would say.
Quality time. That's what's up. We got Fontigolo. You're in North Carolina, I assume?
Yeah, man.
What is that artwork that's on the left side, your left side? I always wonder that when you're interviewing from this place. What is that?
We did a artist did that illustration for us. It was like a card.
Okay.
And like us, one me on top, you on the bottom, like a playing card. And yes, I just framed it. I put it in my studio.
Okay. That's what's up. Laia.
Yeah.
How y'all doing?
We are good. I'm sorry, y'all, for giving you all this. After looking at Sir's album cover, I realized I need to put my workout clothes on every day and act like I'm a workout. Lord. So that's what I'm going to do after this is done.
Bro, you're inspirational.
Come on, man. Come on.
Get your physical together. Get your post-pandemic physical together. We all hear you loud and clear, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, summer's coming up. Get my Sir on. Steve, how's it going?
Good morning, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Yeah.
How's the network doing?
I'm not sure if it exists anymore.
No more network?
Oh, wow.
I don't know. There was some tumultuous season 7. Now we're in season 8. I'm not really sure who's in charge. And, you know, we're moving forward.
Ah, damn. You got mutinied out of your own network?
Kind of.
Damn, Steve.
It's okay.
We got to do a network episode.
Yeah, you're right. I still got my Questlove Supreme family, though.
So basically, I will say that this particular episode, this is one of those practice what you preach moments, because I think around October of last year, I kind of put a note out to the producers of the show, Laia, Cousin Jake, Brittany, that, you know, I didn't want to get too comfortable. Like when you get way too comfortable and in your comfort zone, that could be to an easy downfall. And I was noticing another podcast that sort of stayed in their comfort zone. And they had a really great run, and now they're kind of running out of ideas because they're not pivoting and getting out of that comfort place they like. And of course, when you're coming to Questlove Supreme, 9 times out of 10, we're talking to veterans that have put like, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years in the game. And, you know, it's always fun and very easy to go back and sort of marvel on someone's legacy. I gave a note that I really, especially after the Dave Matthews episode, that I wanted to talk to newer artists, younger artists that maybe I wasn't that familiar with, like the back of my hand. You know, it's not like us doing a Narda Michael Walden episode or us doing a Quincy Jones episode or, you know, something of that level. And so
Wait, we did a Quincy Jones episode?
Oh,
believe it or not, Steve.
Don't talk about it.
We did a Quincy Jones episode, believe it or not.
Actually, Laia can tell us about it, maybe.
Yes, oh, God, yes.
We've done a Quincy Jones episode, so anyway. That said, I kind of said starting in 2024, I want to switch it up a little bit and start connecting with tomorrow's legends. You know, people kind of 10 years, maybe 15 years in the game, younger than your 30, your 40-year-old veterans that will be tomorrow's legends. I think it's rather apropos that our guest today is sort of running on an ongoing theme that we've been having with a lot of artists that we've been speaking to, in that what their lives were before the pandemic has sort of pivoted and moved into another direction. And basically, this artist, of course, has Grammy recognition. He has a new album entitled Heavy, sort of making the rounds as we speak, getting a lot of accolades, and along with his collaborations and his previous records. I'm kind of liking this new place that artists are in right now, in terms of putting their heart out there and showing their vulnerability and showing their journey, which is needed. So pretty much the ongoing theme to me is rather apropos, and our guest is no exception to it. Please welcome to Questlove Supreme, Sir.
Hello.
What up? How y'all doing?
Where are you talking to us from this morning?
84th. I'm over here in Inglewood, man.
You're still in Inglewood. Yay.
Of course. Yeah, I can't leave, man. The neighborhood actually got better since they did the stadium, and they're working on Clipper Stadium over here. If you know anything about the city, it's been a lot of changes over here.
This gentrification thing is real over here.
It's not a bad thing. For somebody that still lives in the city, people that held on to their houses and didn't decide to sell and move and stuff like that, they're up right now. The house I'm in, it's up right now. So I know everybody around me is happy.
It's something special about LA people. They really hold on to their homes in South LA. I live in Leimert, so I'm just saying, yeah, these people hold on to their homes. Yeah.
Oh, for sure, if they know any better, because the property value is just going to keep going up. The center city of Los Angeles, including like Inglewood and Compton, the inner city is flourishing, you know what I mean? And the people that own homes have been there 30, 40 years. So my neighborhood is the same people. I run into the same people I grew up with. They still live in their mama house.
And thank God, hey, Amir, it's funny because the landlords around here are old and black too. So they just is discriminatory. So when I got my place, he definitely looked me up and down like, okay, you fit. Like, baby. Yeah.
That's weird. I went back to my old neighborhood, my old house that you remember, Laia, in South Philly.
St. Albans?
Yeah. Sad to say that I'm the last owner of pretty much of that block. And sad to say, I'm the last black owner. Like, it was a black neighborhood when I moved in. And now I didn't recognize that shit. I felt like Marty McFly walking through 1950. Like, we got a Starbucks on the corner. Like,
that's hilarious.
It's crazy because, for reference, sir, you should know that like Philadelphia is probably in stage 8 of gentrification. It's a 1 to 10. I always say like DC and Harlem are in stage 15 past 10. Yeah. But LA is probably in a 5 or 6. So I know you're saying what you're saying.
So?
Yeah, I do. Y'all just got the stadium. We just getting the train stations. It's yo, they're jogging.
Wait, jogging. So you're saying to me, because the thing was, I went to that stadium on not opening night, but like opening month. Now the stadium, beautiful. Where I park though,
they had you park at the Forum, probably trying to get you over to SoFi.
Dog, I you know, that was a couple of years ago. I hope it's gotten better. So
it hasn't.
It was a little weird. So
Sir said nah. Right.
No, it's still hectic. Now, mind you, I'm not a football fan, so I don't care about the stadium. It's not my thing, you know what I mean? But it's done a lot for the city, you know what I mean? And having met the mayor and talked to him about it and seen, you know, all of the businesses that have come up, and you know, it makes you look at it differently. You know, I definitely was thinking about protecting, you know, the people that were getting displaced, because people got displaced. That's, you know, we ain't gonna talk about that, but you know, they tore down homes and stuff like that to move things in for the Clipper Stadium. And, you know, that was a big thing. But once you start to see the benefit, you kind of look at it like, okay, this can work, you know, but it's all about the community coming together. And I from my perspective, I don't see Inglewood ever being completely gentrified. You know what I mean? I see it as it might end up being a melting pot, which it already kind of is. There's a huge Asian community out here. There's a huge community of Samoans. There's a huge, you know, Mexican community, as well as all the Black folk out here. So, you know what I mean? You're going to have to kick out a whole bunch of different people before you get to straight up just gentrification, you know? And I don't think we're on that route.
I dig it there. Were you born in Inglewood?
Inglewood adjacent. We're Los Angeles, baby. So me and my family were all born in like South Central, but my dad was born in Inglewood. And the house that we grew up in, my grandmother bought in 1964. So we had been in the city my whole life. I was born in, I think I was born in Killer King. I know my mom was.
Okay.
Killer King, is that what you said?
Yeah, Killer King is the hospital in L.A. It's famous. Yeah.
What is it known for, people that aren't
knowledgeable? It's in the hood. So when you get shot, they take you to Killer King, and nobody survives at Killer King.
Mm-hmm. Like Grady.
I was afraid you were going to say that. Okay.
No,
every city got one.
You're on your way to Killer King, you're telling them, take me anywhere but there.
In Philadelphia, that would be Misericordia Hospital. I get it.
Ah, got you. That makes sense.
We called it Miserable Cordia.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
I'll ask you what I ask all of our guests. Do you remember what your first musical memory was in life?
Great question. Okay. I wish I had a piano roll on me because I don't have perfect pitch, but let's just give an example. My mother would be at the piano and she'd be like, "This is C. If you have your fingers here, you're hitting the note. If you go down here, you are flat. If you go up past it, you are sharp, but is it C?" You know what I mean? That's my first musical memory, is my mother teaching us how to sing, or trying to teach us how to sing. And my first musical performance, I was 5 years old in front of the church, and we sang "Oh Holy Night." And so I grew up in a house where music was everything. You know, I don't remember my life when I don't remember a time of my life where somebody wasn't creating or somebody wasn't performing. And, you know, I'm blessed to be in a musical family.
Your mom, she was a singer, and I read she sang for Shaka and Michael Jackson. Like, she did backs for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Miss Jackie.
Yeah. And prayers up for my mom, man. She was in a car accident a couple of days ago. So she's
is she okay?
She's got surgery today at 12. Yeah, and we're just prayerful, man. She fractured her second vertebrae. And it's been, you know, this last couple of days have been really tough on us. But she's doing good. She's in good spirits. But she's
bless
a fighter.
Your mother. And,
yeah.
Prayers up, bro.
How long was she singing?
She grew up in a church too. Her grandfather was a pastor, mother's singer in the church. You know what I mean? Her and her brothers were raised in the church. So my mom doesn't know anything but music. She started playing piano when she was 6 years old. And my Uncle Andrew started playing bass when he was 17 and never looked back. And yeah, you guys know Andrew Boucher. If you know anything about gospel music,
yeah,
you better know Andrew Boucher.
He's the God. Yes.
Yeah, the godfather of bass, you know. And my mother was blessed to have a brother like Andrew. I can say their dynamic kind of creates the dynamic that you see between me and my brother D Smoke and my brother Davion. They help each other when they can, but they're individuals and they're very powerful on their own. So, you know, it was always just a joy to watch my mother work, you know, being the minister of music at church. You know, she was out there every Sunday. No, well, mm-hmm. let's be honest. She was there Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, mm-hmm. Sunday. Mm-hmm. You know, Bible
every
study,
day?
Choir. Yeah, Bible study, choir rehearsal, Friday service, Sunday service. You know what I mean? My mom was a workhorse, you know, and still to this day, we was with her yesterday. And the only thing she was worried about, you know, when they're talking about surgery, she's like, "Can I play the piano?" That's, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care about nothing else.
Right.
I need to play the piano. You know what I mean? So that's the type of mother I have.
Were you Seventh-day Adventist or?
Oh, no. We're non-denomination.
Okay.
Oh, damn. Okay. Okay.
They was just real Christians that did the thing. Like, you know, it's just different church days.
Well, often when I hear every day, usually it's Seventh-day Adventist. But, and it's weird, non-denominational people always thought were the more lenient, not too super strict on things that are normally, you know, the law.
Right.
Slam.
Right.
Okay. So non-denominational. Do you remember like your first creative project? Like what was the first thing that you remember doing creatively, or was singing in that church your first?
Okay. So when I was younger, my mom made us do music, and I, as a kid, I didn't appreciate it. I didn't understand it. I shunned away from it. I didn't like it. So when I was about 14, 15, we sat down and had a conversation about what I wanted. And I was like, I want to play sports. So I stopped doing music, didn't do music 10 years. I didn't even come into the game until I was like 23, 24. My brothers were writing.
24?
Something like that. Yeah, I was 24, 25, something like that. Yeah, I didn't write my first song until I was 26.
Wow.
But, yeah.
If you don't mind me asking, how old are you right now?
37.
Wait, I got to know, Amir.
Well, I'm sorry. I think when you're my age, 53, hello. But everyone to me is just 19.
Yeah, we got to work on that.
Yeah, you thought you were talking to a kid, man. I got kids.
I'm a young kid. Let me
school him on some things, young kid.
Throw my knowledge on this young boy. Oh, man.
Hey, so and just a heads up, you know, I started off because I'm the type of person I am. My thing is knowledge. When I like something, I got to know how to do it right. You know what I mean? So I went to school. I went to Los Angeles Film School. That was my first step when I started writing songs. I was like, oh, I suck. Let me figure out what's going on. I was terrible at it. You know what I mean? And my brother was kind enough to show me that there was potential behind it. But I was like, nah, this don't sound like what these niggas are doing. So I went to the LA Film School, took 2 years of my life and really focused in on trying to just become a better musician and engineer. So I'm a recording engineer by trade. That was my first, you know, thing. And from there, I started to just develop my sound and my songwriting and stuff like that. And this is all while I was just working as an engineer. My first big gig was working for Tyrese, which, yeah, that was interesting. Yeah. I like that face.
And that's Questlove Supreme. I'll see you guys next week.
Yeah. All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. NPR has a new collection of podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy and resilience, empowerment in creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Megan Thee Stallion to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Michelle Obama to the women behind the Montgomery bus boycott, there's no limit to the range of NPR. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and Black as the country they reflect. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
In the 1980s, Frank Farian was riding high as a successful German music producer, but he was bored.
German pop was formulaic, dull, and oh so white. Frank had bigger dreams, American dreams. He wanted to create the kind of music that would rival larger-than-life artists like Michael Jackson or Run DMC.
So he assembled a hip-hop duo, two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? One very important element was missing, but Frank knew just how to fix that.
Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's biggest controversies. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when their adoring fans learned about the infamous lip-syncing, their downfall was swift and brutal. With exclusive interviews from frontman Fab Morvan and his producers Frank Varian and Ingrid Segee, this podcast takes a fresh look at the exploitation of two young Black artists.
Follow Blame It on the Fame wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus.
Shout out to Tyrese. Taught me a lot about people, taught me a lot about the music industry, taught me a lot about independence and how much I wanted it. At the time, like I'm showing up the sessions. I'm his, you know, head engineer in the house. I got six people working for me, you know, and I'm just watching all these other songwriters come in and try to bless him. While at the time I was writing songs and I had found a little confidence, but I wouldn't have said that because it was my job, my day job. So I wasn't even trying to like get in the mix. But I played a couple of records for one of the other songwriters one day, and they were like looking at me crazy. You know what I mean? We were at a camp for his last project called the Black Rose album.
That was a good album.
Yeah. And my brother Davion was one of the songwriters. I got him in to write songs for Tyrese, and he just wasn't having it. He was like, fuck that. You know what I mean? You're going to play some of these fucking songs for Tyrese. So they had this big meeting where everybody would sit down at the end of the week and play 2-3 records or something like that. And I had like a batch of like 5 ready. And I was the last person to play records. Everybody played records. It's like, Daryl got records. So I come in, I play my songs. And everybody lost their shit. It was like this was probably the biggest music moment for me at the time. But Tyrese runs up, gives me a big hug. I didn't know. Oh my gosh, I didn't know I had this talent underneath my wing. You know what I mean? And like 2 weeks
kind of like that, both of ours.
Yeah, you know, I just there's so much going on, man. God is moving in this room. Yeah, people. Hey, look, yeah, can't nobody do Tyrese like me. Look, I tell you what.
Did you make Black Rose? Did you get on the record?
Yeah. I got a couple songs on there. I can't tell you the names of them because I forgot. I don't remember, but I definitely made the project for sure. But, having that big moment, then this is a lesson for a lot of musicians. Just because people look like they fucking with you or they look like they rocking don't mean they got your best interest at heart. You know what I mean? Even after that incident, you know, I kept working for Tyrese. He just, our relationship didn't like progress. It seemed like he's trying to sandbag me, man. He wasn't trying to let me shine. He wasn't trying to put me out there to where he wanted me to be his engineer. And there was a day where Jennifer Hudson came to the house. I don't know if she remembers this, but, you know, she came in to meet him and I let her in the house. And, you know, I'm like, hey, she, you know, was very nonchalant. And he, you know, was introducing her to everybody in the house and just didn't even say my first name, bro. Like I don't know if Tyrese knows this story or remembers this, but couldn't say my name to Jennifer Hudson. Jennifer Hudson didn't look me in the eye. And I took that very personally. I quit that day. I walked in the room. It was like 10 niggas in that room, writers, producers, Jennifer Hudson sitting right there. Eric Bellinger was there. I forget who else was there, Ty Dolla $ign was there, I think. But I walked in there. I was like, hey, Tyrese, hey, pay me for the day, bro. I quit. In front of everybody. Tyrese like, what do you mean? Hey, hold on, y'all. Hold on, y'all. Let me go holler at him and talk to me outside. And there was no convincing me of that. And I think after that, I probably was signed to TDE after 6 months or something like that. I was already like popping. I put my own project out. Wooden Voodoo was the first thing we dropped in 7 Sundays. And it was over after that. And I've never looked back. You know what I mean? And I thank Tyrese for that experience because it taught me a lot about how to treat people, you know, first and foremost.
I want to ask you about your first, about 7 Sundays and the label you put that out on, Fresh Selects. Talk about just that period in your life, man. I love that record. I played it, you know, all the time. I just wanted to talk about that time in your life.
I was broken, homeless. I just quit Tyrese and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I was trying to figure things out. And we had just put out this tape that had like 21 songs on it. It's called Wooden Voodoo. It's my first tape, if anybody really looks for it. It's on like SoundCloud.
Is it on YouTube?
It's called what again?
Wooden Voodoo. Look it up.
Wooden Voodoo.
It's got some stuff on there. But Kenny heard it. Kenny Fresh from Fresh Selects heard it. And he contacted me and was like, I want to put this project out. I was like, okay, I'm already working on something. And we started to playlist for 7 Sundays. And 7 Sundays is what introduced me to Top and got me in the room with TDE. So I look at that time as like this. That was probably like the highlight of my career because it opened so many doors for me. And I did that all by myself. It was just me and Kenny. And he really didn't even do anything. He just suggested, like, I like this song, I like that song. I did the mix, I did the master, I cut the vocal. You know what I mean? And yes, I said I did the master myself. Like, I was engineering back then. I don't do that shit no more. I got help, but I engineered.
Wait, even now, as an artist, you're an engineer, so you would know how you want the song to sound.
Yes, yes. Oh yeah. I mean, I still cut my own vocal. I can't let go of those reins. Like, I've tried. I've hired engineers. I've sat down. But imagine this: you're in the booth, guys in the chair, and you cut a vocal, but you just want him to nudge it. You have to say, "I need you to nudge this to the left." Now imagine I'm sitting in the chair. I cut the vocal. I need to nudge it.
I can nudge it. Right.
I nudged it. You know what I mean? And that's it. That's the whole thing.
Steve, no, I'm playing.
Yeah. No, Amir is much more, for people who don't realize, he's much more of an engineer than people know.
He
mixes more than I do most of the time. I mean, I'm recording because he's, you know, playing and producing a lot of times. But when it comes time to do rough mixes, and certainly in the final mix stage, Amir has got his hands on the dial since I met him, since Electric Lady in 96. He just gets right on the board. It's easier and quicker than to try and explain what you want if you just know the basics, you know. And Amir loves plugins, so he just loves playing around with toys, essentially. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot. I mean, D'Angelo was recording his own vocals, and things like that. But it's certainly helpful as an artist to know how to engineer.
I would think, from a singing standpoint, which is such a vulnerable thing to do, are you the type of singer that needs pretty much your space? Like, are you the singer that can turn it on if five people are in the room watching you, the engineer, your boys, your family in there watching you? Or is it like, everyone get out the room, engineer too, I could do this myself?
No, I don't care who's watching. You go watch.
Especially with this album?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, well, this album was different. I was high most of the time, so there wasn't nobody around.
Okay.
No, you can stay in the room. I don't mind people being around. Just shut the fuck up. I got to cut the vocals. Be quiet. I don't want to hear you on my track. But, you know, these last few years, I honestly don't know how these songs came. I can't explain it. I don't even remember most of these sessions. I don't remember a lot because I was just faded. A lot of people have heard the story a million times about me going to rehab and all that, blah, blah, blah. You know, I beat that story into the ground. So if we can just swing by this real quick.
I feel you.
I'm sober. It's been a year and 5 months.
Yay.
You know what I mean? I found sobriety my way. You know what I mean? I still smoke a little weed every once in a while.
Thank you for saying this. Thank you. Because you're in a safe space.
No, sobriety is different for everybody. You know what I mean? Everybody has, if you're an addict like I was, you have a DOC. Now, your DOC, your drug of choice, is your drug of choice. That doesn't mean that everything will affect you like that will, but you got to stay away from that thing. And, you know, I found my way through depression because, you know, people don't just do drugs. There are root issues to, you know, there's reasoning behind it. And I had root issues that I had to find. So therapy, rehab, family, everything that, you know, all of the love I had helped me kind of figure out what was going on. And it placed me back in a position where I could fight for my life. You know,
I've been somewhat transparent about my journey. I mean, I'm now like 3 years removed from the path I'm on now, but I can definitely acknowledge that year one of this new paradigm shift, Questlove, the first 7 months, I was actively, subconsciously and consciously trying to sabotage it because it was just a very fearful place to be in. Could you talk about your experience behind that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I like what you said about, you know, there being a fear of success, because I think there was never a doubt in my mind that I would be good at music. You know what I mean? But there was, I'm a married man. I've been married for 15 years. Been with my wife for 20. And, you know, the type of music I make and the artist that everyone wanted me to be, me being a married man, those two things didn't mix. So, you know, there was always this push and pull of, you know what I mean? I want to succeed, but, you know, I don't know what it's going to look like. You know what I mean? And as I started to progress in my career, I started to notice that you know, people didn't give a fuck about my marriage. You know what I mean? And that made it very hard for me to enjoy my career, you know what I mean? And enjoy the successes of my music. And then on top of that, the attention that you get when you're in the position we're in makes it very hard for you to be, you know, to see things how everyone else sees it. Let's say it like that. You know what I mean? It skews your view on, you know, relationships and people. And it really kind of like set me back because I didn't go about it the right way. You know what I mean? I wasn't doing a good job of just taking care of myself first. You know what I mean? I was so concerned with what everybody thought about me and what everybody wanted me to be as an artist and stuff like that. And I was people pleasing and things like that. And then I was just neglecting my relationship with my wife, you know what I mean? For this image of sir that I thought I needed to be. And then I got sick of him and, you know, had already caused problems at home. Didn't want to go back to who he was and found this middle place of like, I'm just going to silently like self-medicate. You know what I mean? Because I'm depressed. My home life is messed up. Sir ain't who I want to be, but niggas love him. They love that guy. You know what I mean? And I just, you know, I started to self-medicate and, you know, didn't tell anybody until it was too late. And once I decided that it was time to tell people, the pandemic happened. So it's all piled on. You know, but, you know, as someone that, you know, doesn't give a fuck about like fame or like I don't do this for the accolades. I actually like love music. It's very hard to appreciate artistry and everything it comes with when, you know what I mean, people don't like respect it or respect you. They don't respect your humanity when they see you as an artist. You know what I mean? And I had to learn that the hard way.
I was just going to ask, what else did you have outside of rehab coming out of COVID? You also, it sounds like you also had people around you that you may have had to shuffle a little bit, change.
Oh, for sure. For sure. No, I got friends I can't see. You know what I mean? My family was very hands-on in my health and my recovery. You know what I mean? So me and my family, we were already tight-knit, but this kind of just brought us closer together. But yeah, I definitely like my whole circle is different. I got like two friends that I call, you know what I mean? And for the most part, I speak to my mother, my father, my brothers and try to keep it like that.
We haven't talked about your dad. Oh, wow.
My dad. He's my dad is he's a funny guy. His name's Ron. And he's going to be happy that I said his name on the interview. Oh, it is Ronald.
Yes, Ronald.
Yeah, my dad is the oldest of like six kids. He's one of the most gentle people you'll ever meet in your life. And he don't sing. He don't do music. But he loves my mama. He loves my mama.
Ooh,
you know what I mean?
Wait a minute, sir. Talk about growing up in that. Like being a married man and growing up and having that. Because a lot of people
I had a great example. Now, mind you, my father, when I was growing up, he spent some time in the pen. He didn't. Okay. He had two strikes before I was, you know, thought of. So when I was six, he got out of jail and never looked back, you know, and took care of his family. And I've seen him struggle so hard. You know what I mean? You know, having two strikes in the '90s, it wasn't too much work for him. He, you know, he was a limo driver. He was a chaplain. He's done so many different things just to provide for us and give us opportunities to be great. And we love him to death, man. And he's still, you know, just super hands on in my life. And, you know, I talk to him all the time. But I say he's a funny guy because my dad's getting old. Like, he's an old man now.
What is old, sir?
Oh, my gosh. He's an old. But what's even more funny is my brothers are turning into old men, too. Me and my brothers, we wake up in the morning with neck pains and all. I'm 37. You know, I ain't no spring chicken, man.
Are you the youngest of your three?
I'm the youngest, yeah.
Wait, how old is D-Smoke?
He's 38, about to be 39.
Oh, y'all were youngins, man.
And your parents was moving fast.
See, this explains it, because, again, I'm thinking like, damn, man, for a 24-year-old, this guy got a lot of wisdom under his belt. Now I get it. I get it now.
All right, y'all, you know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
In the 1980s, Frank Farian was riding high as a successful German music producer, but he was bored.
German pop was formulaic, dull, and oh so white. Frank had bigger dreams, American dreams. He wanted to create the kind of music that would rival larger-than-life artists like Michael Jackson or Run DMC.
So he assembled a hip-hop duo, two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? One very important element was missing, but Frank knew just how to fix that.
Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's biggest controversies. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when their adoring fans learned about the infamous lip-syncing, their downfall was swift and brutal. With exclusive interviews from frontman Fab Morvan and his producers Frank Farian and Ingrid Segui, this podcast takes a fresh look at the exploitation of two young Black artists.
Follow Blame It on the Fame wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo! Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five!
High Five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
As far as your pin game is concerned, how hard is it to use your music to express what you're feeling inside?
I wouldn't say it's difficult. It just hurts when I do it. You know, and this is like a superpower I've developed over years of like trial and error. It's just pulling from emotional places. You know, I'm really good at it. And you know, the poetry comes from pain. So it's kind of a second nature thing for me now, man. And like right now I'm sitting in my house. I haven't written a song in like probably 3-4 months. I'm like an out of practice musician, it feels like. But I know as soon as I sit down to do it, I know my process. I know what I want out of these songs. If I hear the music and it's there, the song's damn near already written at this point. You know what I mean? But that comes from years of working. I put so much time in that people don't see. You know what I mean? With songwriting, writing for other artists, writing for myself. I got a pile of probably 500 songs that ain't never going to see the light of day, but I go back and listen to them and examine them and pick them apart just to, you know, try to fine tune my craft, you know? But I'm proud that people like know me as like a songwriter. Like they actually like the lyrics and shit like that because I, yeah. You know, I don't put, you know, I don't want to like ever, you know, assume that people listen to my shit and they love it. You know, they love what I got to say. You know what I mean? I'm
crashing down. That's my record, man.
Yeah. Crashing down. I'm blessed to be in the position I'm in. Like a lot of people just, they trying to say cool shit. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I'm trying to dig so deep in that it's relatable to the outer world. You know what I mean? I think that's my secret.
When you sit down to write, are you like a lyrics guy first or a melody guy first?
It depends.
Yeah.
It all depends. I you know, that people that try to say they're one or the other don't really, to me, I ain't doing it right. You know what I mean? Because you know, this is, I don't know, it's like basketball. In a basketball game, you're dribbling down the court, you're not going to shoot the same shot every time. You know what I mean? You got to have some kind of, you know, knowledge of where you're at. And what, you know, what the court is dictating. So my songwriting is dictated by the court that I'm standing on.
Gotcha. When it comes to your songs, is it more of a, you're writing songs and artists or A&R are picking the songs? Or is it also too, you're writing songs for certain people?
Nah, I just write now. I don't write for anybody. I have a pile. And, you know, even when I was writing for other people, I never really wrote for them. I didn't like sit down like, okay, I need the Beyonce song. I hate them niggas. That shit don't. That shit's trash. Yeah. let me write a song for Beyonce. Oh, my mother get up placement on a Beyonce record. No. I just write music. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just write a great song. Yeah.
No, I came from that. I came from, like, we were Woodworks first. People don't know I was in, and we were writing songs for other people. My brothers had some big placements. They had Usher placements and, like, Jaheim placements back in the day. And that's what really, like, sold me on mm-hmm. becoming, like, a musician. So my first, like, before I wrote my own projects, we were working on like writing for other people. And I was in a songwriting camp of six motherfuckers. Mm. So, you know, that taught me a lot about who I wanted to be as a writer.
Can you explain to me what those, I always hear about those types of camps, especially from artists that come on this show. Never been a part of those camps because apparently I'm doing it wrong. Like,
no, you're doing it right, brother.
I don't know, but what are camps like? Because it's also like, is it every man for himself? Is it like, you're out for blood? Like, I got to get a placement on this record. And
it's pretty cutthroat at certain points. But I mean, I'm so displaced from it. I haven't been in a camp 10 years, man. So I don't know. I don't know what they like nowadays. But when I was doing it, it was tough. It was tough. So what we used to do, because we all loved each other and everyone wanted to succeed, is we would break songs down into pieces. That's how Woodworks did it. Somebody got the first verse. We were writing a hook together. Somebody got the second verse. Somebody get a bridge. You know what I mean?
Piecemeal. Okay.
Yeah. That didn't always work, but that was the game plan. That's how we went into the situations. And then if you're going into a writing camp where it's like a whole bunch of individuals, writers that are coming in, like, look, okay, let's say Tyrese sets up a camp where he has producers and writers and come. That is very cutthroat because everyone's writing by themselves on their own little setup to bring to play to Tyrese so that he can choose what records he's going to cut. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that was a different environment. I can say that the songwriters that I've come across, they're all very competitive, but, you know, there is a community of like, I'm going to help you out. You know, it was never so cutthroat that work wasn't getting done.
I can only imagine that, you know, if it's coming from your insides and it's your song, it's like your child. So I wonder, like, all right, well, I got a first verse. You know, and I do believe in that whole thing of how inspiration hits you, that, you know, you have to be in the right environment, acquired. I mean, some people need to be in a chaotic environment. I know people that feel like they need to be in arguments with their girlfriend or, you know, whatever floats their boat to have the ideas come. Quincy Jones, on the episode that will never come out, says that all of his ideas come at 1 a.m, that sort of thing. But I don't know. I can't imagine, like, okay, having half a song and just in the name of time, like, all right, well, you take it over. Now it's your child and we're co-parents. Like, I just never understood that process. Like, I always felt like once a song comes out of you, you should see it through soup to nuts. But, you know. I don't know. Like, do you recommend writers camps, or for you, it's better when it's just coming from you isolated alone?
Well, as an artist, I don't recommend writing camps, but I do recommend writing with other writers. So, like, for example, there's an artist named Jazzy she's a singer songwriter and she's very popular. Okay. I brought her in to help me write the song that I have with Ty Dolla $ign on the album, and I did it because, you know, when creating albums, I feel like you need to have different, like, let's just use the word vibes. I hate the word, but you gotta have different.
This is how I know you're not 20. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta have different. There has to be some type of variety, you know, to the sound, in my opinion, to make a great project. You know, it's really hard to pull off when it's just you in your head. You know what I mean? I feel like I've learned to let people in because people, you know, can improve something for you, or, you know, can make something better by, you know, looking at it from their perspective, you know, and I can learn a lot still. I definitely don't think I know everything. So having help, you know what I mean, to get you through your own thoughts isn't a bad thing. It just depends on how you handle it. You know, and I think I've had years of trial and error with working with other artists. So I know what I like immediately. It'll take 10 minutes for me to decide if we actually going to do the session. You know what I mean? Like, if we're sitting down, and, you know, once I'm locked in with somebody, it's going to go smoothly. But this is all trial and error. And I feel like I've learned, for me, I need help. And my music sounds better when I have the right type of help. So it's not just about having a whole bunch of songwriters, people come in. It's about having the right
people. Yeah.
Of all the storied cliques in contemporary music, you know, start with Native Tongues and then start with Wu-Tang and then starting with Death Row. TDE, to me, is, well, one of the most ubiquitous, but also on the other side of that coin, one of the most mysterious organizations mm-hmm. that I know of but don't know jack about.
Yeah. Are we?
Yeah.
All right, look, when you join this organization, number one, I'm under the impression that if you join TDE, then, yeah, like SZA and Isaiah and Schoolboy and Absol and Doshi and, like, the whole clique are all family, like, working together on each other's projects and that sort of thing. Mm. But, like, what is it? Like, because I know nothing about Anthony and...
It is songwriting. We were just talking about the songwriting camps. It is mm-hmm. the songwriting camps at the highest level. So everybody is out for blood. We are all hungry. We are all independent. We help each other out where we can, but we all got careers to take care of. Now, mind you, we're family. You know what I mean? And we're very tight. We're very close knit. You know what I mean? But man, TD, there's still a learning curve for me. You know what I mean? All right, so let's take away the music industry. Like, them is bloods, these gang members. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
like, at least in LA. So I gotta first just respect that. You know what I mean? Like at any given time, shit can go sour and you know, all hell could break loose on this side, you know. So I just had to learn who I was dealing with and learn that, you know. Respect is earned, you know what I mean, before it's given in this circle. And we don't tolerate disrespect. We don't tolerate ignorance, stuff like that. Top is like, he's hardcore, man. And as hardcore as he is, he's also very gentle and very loving. He's a father of like 9 kids. He's got a lot of children. Yeah, Top is a interesting dude, man. He's
Charlie Mack?
But as far as TDE goes, I will say this. I've never been in a place where I'm that motivated to stand out in my life. There's so many great things happening. It just makes me want to work so much harder to be the best version of myself. SZA's on top of the planet. Motherfucking Doechii scares me. Oh, my God.
Yes.
He is. Yeah. If you're not familiar, go check out. That's a Florida girl. And she's it. Like, you can't tell me nothing. I know music and I know what I like. I know beyond what I like, what is proper. Like, I know when it hits, when it smacks, and when the artist behind it knows how to make it smack. This bitch?
Yes. I didn't even know she was with y'all. I'm like, what? And she with y'all? That's crazy.
Look yeah. I met Doechii I guess a couple weeks before they announced she was signing TD when they first came. She came in so nice and played me some records. She played me the craziest records. What's the song that she has out? You probably won't know anyway, but she played me something that I was floored. Floored. This is one of the most talented women in the game right now. And I know SZA, and deserves everything that's going on, but Doechii is, mm-hmm. you could ask SZA about Doechii, she gonna say the same thing. I'm scared of that girl. Mm. You know, but that's the environment that TDE creates. It creates monsters. It creates people that are so hungry that you ain't. Hey, don't give a fuck what y'all got going on. It's me. It's TDE or it's nothing else. You know what I mean? And it's always going to be that.
As an avid watcher of King of the Hill, can you please explain your logic behind John Redcorn?
We can talk about King of the Hill all day, okay? Let go of my purse. I don't know you, okay?
Oh, John Redcorn, he was the indigenous dude on King of the Hill. Yes, that was married to the blonde chick.
And he's having, right.
Yes. John Redcorn was not married. Redcorn was having a motherfucker.
Right,
He was the dude on the side. Dale Gribble is blind in the back and could not see what was going on.
He was dirty Mac.
Now, there was a boy on the show. His name was Joseph
yes, the son. Was
Dale Gribble's son.
Yes,
but we all know the truth behind that whole story. Now, mind you, me and my wife, like, we, oh my gosh, we burned King of the Hill into the ground. I've watched the season finale so many times, and like, I'm a huge, huge fan of John Redcorn in general, just because of the episodes that I remember him on.
Yeah,
and you know that song was a happy accident. Let's be honest. I didn't expect that motherfucker to go as crazy as it did, but it did.
I only asked you simply because, you know, oftentimes artists, especially under the umbrella of hip hop, and I kind of blame Ghostface for this, where they'll just title their song anything that has nothing to do with the song.
Yeah.
But when I saw that, I was like, nah, there's something deeper behind this besides just naming it John Redcorn. And especially, I know the character that he is and was curious to how you landed there. And so,
you know, I actually started with I was like, I was watching King of the Hill. Yeah. And I was watching the episode where Joseph was like, it was like a Joseph John Redcorn episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, he left and was just in his, oh, he was crying in his car or something like that. And right. it made me so sad. I was like, oh my gosh, poor guy. And the first verse came, the hook came immediately. Alone, every night alone. And I was like, this might be interesting. And I wrote that, I actually helped produce that song. So I did drums first, so I beatboxed, and then I did the harmonies and recorded over the harmonies, and then had somebody come in and play guitar. So I had musicians build around my, I did my little three-part or whatever, and we went from there. But like, you know, that was, like I said, a happy accident, but it definitely helped like shape how I wrote songs for the next few years because of how people responded to it. You know, it made me a little more adventurous. It made me want to connect the dots before I sat down to write. I do a lot of that, like a lot of prepping before I actually write the song in thought, where I, you know, I listen to the music, I sit, I'm listening to the beat, but I'm also trying to just figure out, you know, what would go good over the beat and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, you know, this is like, John Redcorn is my baby, man. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
I love that song, man. The show is beautiful.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
For real. I wanted to ask you about one of your collaborators you've been working with over the years, DK the Punisher, man.
Hey.
And you guys, y'all's relationship and y'all's creative chemistry, how did that come about?
Me and DK met through one of my favorite people on the planet, Quest. I don't know if you remember. I think I met you back in the day through this guy, through Andre Harris, through Dre Madal.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Dang, you've been to a playlist retreat. I met you at the playlist retreat.
You've come to Jeff's thing?
Yeah. I've been. I was there the first 3 years, and then the drugs.
I knew it.
You know what? The night I came to the playlist retreat, I got there late from the Tonight Show, and there was a taco truck outside it. And what they failed to tell me was that all the tacos were infused. And I was, you know, post-pandemic, I microdose. I like edibles. I'm very lightweight. And so I downed about four of those tacos because I was starving. I found out the hard way.
The rest of the night was interesting. Oh, euphoria all around. Yeah, the most euphoric tacos you'll ever have in your life.
Correcto mundo.
But I actually met DK the Punisher in 2010 at Andre Harris's house. This is the first opportunity I had to write songs as just a songwriter, nobody's engineer, was given to me by Andre Harris. And me and DK met working under Andre Harris. And we got great placements, had some great work, met Miss Jill, got placements on The Woman Project. You know, I did Fool's Gold. DK produced Fool's Gold for Miss Jill on her last project.
Nice.
But like, that's my brother at this point. That's my Baltimore connect, you know. So I like, me and him have a different type of relationship now outside of music. Like, I'm about to call him right now. We're supposed to work out today, so he's gonna go link up. But that's my literal brother at this point. And musically, you know, me and him just click. Whenever we decide to work, it just works.
Now y'all boys got chemistry, man.
Man, but the music industry is tough, man. DK actually had to shift. He's a web developer now. So, you know, and this is one thing that I always recommend to, you know, career musicians. If it's not paying your rent, like, don't force that. Don't be a broke musician. I don't recommend that for anybody. Having experienced that, go get you a fucking job. You're getting your job isn't going to take away from your talent. It's going to make it easier for you to get things done if you really think about it. You know, so DK did that. And of course, he still has placements on Heavy. He's still working, you know what I mean? But I'm happy for him because his life is balanced out now and he can focus on being a better musician because he has a career to kind of balance.
Another skill.
Hey, a whole other skill.
You didn't mention, what was your first placement? That's what I asked Amir that I forgot.
Yeah. My first placement? Oh my God. A song called Drinks Ain't Free by Warren G.
Oh, wow. All right.
Okay. I like that face, Ethan.
No, that came out of nowhere. All right.
Yeah, all right. It's a peculiar one. Artist named Iman Omari.
Shout out to Iman Omari, man. Yeah.
Iman is the one that set that session up. He called me like, girl, hey, I got a session with Warren G. Pull up. And then we pulled up. And I got my little part off.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
In the 1980s, Frank Farian was riding high as a successful German music producer, but he was bored.
German pop was formulaic, dull, and oh so white. Frank had bigger dreams, American dreams. He wanted to create the kind of music that would rival larger-than-life artists like Michael Jackson or Run DMC.
So he assembled a hip-hop duo, two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? One very important element was missing, but Frank knew just how to fix that.
Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's biggest controversies. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when their adoring fans learned about the infamous lip-syncing, their downfall was swift and brutal. With exclusive interviews from frontman Fab Morvan and his producers Frank Farian and Ingrid Segui, this podcast takes a fresh look at the exploitation of two young Black artists.
Follow Blame It on the Fame wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high-five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Can you talk about the LA music scene? Because I'm curious about the camaraderie, because I've heard you mention in interviews before that it's a lot of competition, but there's got to be camaraderie because you collaborated with Anderson. You collaborated with, I'm guessing, like majority of the folks out here. So, but mm-hmm. What is the scene? Like, where do y'all go to? Like, what's the club? It just doesn't feel like LA is like that, like Philly was. I come from Philly. Yeah, I know it's weird. It's
like y'all. I don't know. Ain't no scene for me.
Right.
I keep to myself. The LA musicians, like, it's like, all right, so you know how you go to LA shows and the crowd just like stares at you?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how the LA musician scene feels. Like, we don't really get along like you think we would. Nah, it ain't no okay. camaraderie or anything uh-huh. like that. TDE is TDE. We keep to okay. ourselves, then it's everybody okay. else outside of that circle.
But Ty ain't in TDE though, right? Ty's not in TDE.
Oh, Ty Dolla $ign?
Yeah.
No, Ty not right. TDE, but right. I mean, that's like, Ty is Ty. He's hard to get to. Only reason I like have these connections is because I'm me. And I don't say that like as a musician, like the type of person I am. You know, once you meet me and you shake my hand and you start to talk to me, you understand that I have no ill intention. I really respect the art and the game. And I think that goes a long way with a lot of artists. Like Anderson, I was a fan of his, and I met him when he was still Breezy Lovejoy. And you know, he was, I forgot the project, but it had a song on there. It was like, take me to the stargate and blast me into space. Dun, 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 dun. This beautiful song. And I met him and fanboyed and like was genuine about it. Like wasn't, you know, I didn't want to like act all hard. I was like, yo, I love your shit, man. Oh my gosh. And me and him have been friends ever since because I was genuine. And like when I meet people like Ty and you know, I was always genuine. So I feel like, they see me come back around with my own stuff, and they want to help, they want to work because of the type of person I am. And that's the thing. It's always a people thing for me. You know what I mean? I don't care where you're from, what you do, as long as you're good people, you know, and I'm here to support that.
You see that in a circle back. Even when you mentioned Jill and how you had met her as an engineer, and then y'all ended up collaborating on your album, I was like, well, that speaks volumes.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I mean, shout out to Miss Jill, man. She's still very instrumental. Like when I was going through all of my drug use, she was calling me and like, didn't nobody call me? Didn't nobody check in on me? Yeah, she called me the other day just about my mother, just to check in and about my album. She called me to let me know she heard my shit and like she loved it. You know what I mean? And like, shout out to Miss Jill. Yeah, I mean, you guys know it's Jilly from Philly. And shout out to Philly. Let's start there.
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
Shout out to Philadelphia. Okay. All of my music connects, or all of the things that are all of the people that have really like put on for me are from Philly. You know what I mean? And I mean, you guys, I don't know what's in the water. But like the talent pool is phenomenal. You know what I mean? And I'm glad to be a part of that community. I'm glad to say that I'm somewhat a part of that community of people, you know?
Well, thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Before we close, I got to ask, can you tell me, and I'm asking more personally, like what was the process, the steps to your health journey now? You know,
a lot of prayer.
And when I mean health journey, I actually mean your physical health journey. Cause I too
a lot of prayer. Well, nah, you know, all right. So I'm a foodie. I love to eat. And during all of this, you know, the pandemic and stuff, all we had was Postmates sitting at the house. So I got up to about 250 pounds. Look, and I, you know, even now I'm just shocked to see where I got. To honestly answer your question, I don't know how all this happened. I was just standing on a wing in a prayer, man. No. I started by asking questions. What did I want? You know what I mean? Who do I want to be? What do I want to look like? And I came up with a goal to get down to 200 pounds. And after I lost a few pounds, I got to this point where I wasn't losing any more weight. So I got a nutritionist because I felt like my eating was the biggest thing. So my nutritionist is the real reason that I'm in the shape I'm in now. He taught me how to spread my meals out. He taught me how, you know, eat the right amount of protein, make sure I get the right kind of carbs in. So my diet did everything.
You ain't no sugar. What you doing, sir?
Bread, no sugar, no salt, no life, no love, no hugs, no happiness.
God. All I got is
just, I'm with you right now, man. I'm drinking my salads.
That's right. Hey, and
these damn seaweed chips.
On a personal note, if y'all ever need information on stuff, I'm a wealth of knowledge when it comes to like health and eating and stuff like that. You know, because it's important, especially for us as Black folk. You know what I mean? We have our issues and we need to pass knowledge around so that we can all, you know, thrive and be healthy. So
watch this.
Anytime you feel like you need some information, man, feel free to reach out, bro. I got you.
So, sir, you on the functional mushrooms? You want to,
no mushrooms. That's a part of my, I can't do mushrooms, no.
No, not shrooms. Not shrooms, sir. I'm talking about Reishi.
He does the good shrooms. I do the bad shrooms.
Yeah, that not a mere shroom. I'm talking about the other one.
The coffee shrooms
over here. That's right. Naturals. Okay,
you did say that you did that. Like, I'm gonna try that. Matter of fact, I'm gonna try it now. We have some in the kitchen.
I got my multivitamin for sure. I definitely like try to stay as healthy as possible. But I mean, I feel like people that need multivitamins are eating like shit. You know what I mean? Eat healthy. Yeah. You won't need to do all the extra shit. Just do put some greens in your body. This is one. Here's the note of the day: if you're gonna eat like crap, put something green on your stomach first, because there's something inside of, you know, in the fiber or something, there's a chemical that gets put in your stomach and it lines your stomach and helps you digest your food better if you eat green before you eat anything else. So just eat a little salad before you eat anything else. That'll help out.
Yes.
Oh, salad. You're not like a juicer. Green, I mean, or...
The juice works.
I'm not a salad fan at all. So all my juices are salads. So
smart man. Now, and it works just as well.
Can I ask Fat Sir one question? I'd like to ask Fat Sir, old Fat Sir. Can you tell me though in Inglewood, three of your favorite places to eat? Because I just would like to know.
You going there right now?
Inglewood, sir.
All right. If you just want a like small little breakfast spot, Emma's is, and it's a hole in the wall. This is our bodega. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So now Emma's is on Market in Manchester. She right across the street from the swap meet. She's just a little hole in the wall, but you go in there, you just get you a breakfast burrito. Emma will take care of it.
I'm a breakfast burrito fiend, so thank you. I'm always on the chase. Okay.
All right. So now, and you tell her that Daniel sent you. Don't tell her Daryl sent you. Tell her D-Smoke sent you.
Ah! Put extra cheese on it. All right.
Yeah. So, Doolin's.
Really?
You don't like this? See? You had me lying.
No.
Nah, you just disrespecting my city.
I thought it was commercial. I didn't know if it was okay.
Doolin's is all we got. I'm not gonna say it's the best soul food out here because I'd be lying, but Doolin's is what we got.
Okay.
So
okay.
Go get you some oxtail, go get you some smothered chicken from Doolin's. You'll be all right.
Now give me a healthy spot. Give me one of the last spot. What you got?
Oh, Simply Wholesome.
Oh, well, yeah, I live down the street. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, that's not Inglewood, but that's where we go. That's okay. Where we go.
Simply Wholesome.
Oh, y'all don't go to my 2 cents anymore? That spot?
Nah, that's not my spot. Nah. That's an out-of-towners Inglewood spot.
I support my 2 cents.
Ooh.
Hey, ain't nothing wrong with that.
Shout out to Dustin Felder. But Simply Wholesome is historic in of course, in South LA and that ownership. So
Got it. Well, sir.
Thank you, sir.
I thank you for taking time out to speak to us. Also, Godspeed on
your mommy.
Yeah, your mom's, man.
And good energy to her. But more than that, I really appreciate just you and applaud your ability to not only share your life, not only through your music, but in your personal story, your recovery, and just your daily walk. And it's needed. And especially the air quote tumultuous times that we're in when you're watching a lot of the old guard get dealt with and you're seeing the new guard come into play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is... overdue and needed, and I applaud you, and thank you for coming on and Questlove Supreme to share your story with us, man. Yeah. Thank you, man.
I really appreciate you guys inviting me, man. And just to say, I'm a huge fan, bro. I have been for years and years and years. I ain't gonna gas you too much, man. But you, I look up to you, man. And
likewise, thank you, brother.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me, man. That the album is dope, but the song, like, that's my favorite record on the album. That's just a beautiful song, man. Really, really vulnerable. Just the vocal performance on it is just really beautiful, man. So man, thank you.
Thank you for saying that, bro. I really appreciate that. This album is a labor of love. And, you know, I'm just excited to start getting out here and performing these songs and getting through this. You know,
it's gonna be tough. Yeah, it's going to be tough.
That's what's up.
We pulling up.
It's not going to be tough.
This album is, but it's going to be.
Take one step at a time. Nah, man. Yeah. Just look, if it's uncomfortable, go with it. If it's out of your comfort zone, go with it.
Yep. I've learned not to hold back on my emotions. If I got to cry on stage, I'm going to let it out, but we're going to get through it for sure. Yeah.
That's important. Right. I applaud that shit.
Thank you.
On behalf of Fonticolo, Sugar Steve, get your network back, bruh. We thank you all, Aya. And the rest of you. I'm changing.
You thank get you,
Aya. Now today, girl.
Welcome.
Shout out to cousin Jake and Brittany. Thank you. And sir. Big up to you. We'll see you next week on Questlove Supreme. All right. Peace.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for listening to Questlove Supreme. This podcast is hosted by Amir Questlove Thompson, Laia St. Clair, Fonte Coleman, Sugar Steve Mandel, and myself, unpaid Bill Sherman. The executive producers are Amir, just walked into the goddamn room, Thompson, Sean G, and Brian Calhoun. Produced by Brittany Benjamin, Jake Payne, and Laia Sinclair. Edited by Alex Conroy. I know Alex Conroy. Produced for iHeart by Noel Brown.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
High Five Casino. High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. the hottest games right from Vegas, and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at High5Casino.com.
High Five Casino.
Diamonds Direct has done it again. This month only, get ready for an offer you can't resist. Buy a natural diamond engagement ring of 1 carat plus and receive a free natural 1 carat diamond tennis bracelet valued at $2,000. That's right, a stunning diamond tennis bracelet at no extra cost. Imagine giving her the ring of her dreams and her wedding gift all at once. So hurry into Diamonds Direct. Your chance to get a free tennis bracelet will not last long. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.